Mitzvah Tav Yud Ches 418. Mitzvahs Ahavas Hashem, the mitzvah to love God. And it's Davinu Lehoves Amakom Baruch Hu. We were commanded to love the omnipresent. May He be blessed. Shenemar. We say it's in Krishma. Last time we did the first pasuk of Krishma. Now we're doing the second pasuk of Krishma. Binyan mitzvah shenachsho venisbonen bevikudav ufulosav, that we are supposed to dwell and contemplate and think about what God does. Ad shenasigehu kefiya choltenu, that we too, obviously it's impossible for any human to completely understand God, but to the best of our ability, we have to understand and appreciate God. Not only that, but we should derive pleasure from the fact that we understand God and we are intimately connected with the ultimate purpose and creator of the universe. This is what we're supposed to do when it talks about loving God. What? Yeah. Yep. Lashon Sifri, here it says in my footnote that this is the nusach of most manuscripts, but yours also exists. Lashon Sifri, Lefisha Namar, Ve'ohavta, thou shalt love. Eini Odea Ketzad Odam Hamakom. How do you love God? How is such a thing even possible? The continuation of the pasuk is, to a certain extent, an explanation of what it means to love God. That all the things that I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. It's through the commandments of God, not only the religious commandments of the Torah, but of the way He commands the universe to operate, that you recognize that that God exists and is there and love the fact that He exists. Kilomar sheim ha'isbonenus b'Torah tisyashiv ho'ava b'leiv b'chriach. That when you understand, also, he was talking about limiting it to specifically the religious things, we'll talk about the non-religious things later, that when you think about the commands of the Torah, then, and you really, really dwell on them and appreciate their wisdom and how beneficial they are to the individual and to society, so then you are going to come to a love of God. V'amru zichron livracha, shezo so'ava techayev ha'odam le'orer b'nei odam ba'avaso le'ovdo, kemosh matzinu ba'avram. And this love, if it's done properly, not only is a personal thing, but rather it's something that you want to share with others. So kiruv, nu? Kiruv is not about what? Kiruv is not okay. Kiruv is fundamentally should be about people loving God so much that you want everyone to love God the same way that that you do, and that's Avram Avinu. That Avram Avinu was the first Mekariv, that he came to the recognition of God, and he was so bound up with love of God that he wanted to bring people along for the journey. It says in the Chumash, the classical explanation of the pasuk, "Vesa nefesh asher asu v'charan," that Avram and Sarah used to collect people. They used to make people, make souls. What is making souls? It says Avram megayeres anoshim v'Sarah megayeres es anoshim. That obviously it's a little bit anachronistic terminology, but Avram used to convert the men, and Sarah used to convert the women. That they used to hold classes, kiruv classes, to spread the message of one true God to all humanity. The Gemara also talks about Avas Hashem, that Shem Shemayim, Shenimtza Shem Shemayim Ahuv Al Yadach, that part of the mitzvah to love God and to make others appreciate God and to love God as well is to ensure that you act in a way that encourages people to love God. In other words, we also call this Chil Hashem. That when you act in a manner of Chil Hashem, and people say, those Jews, they claim to be so close to God, to worship God, and look how they're acting, we're not interested in having anything to do with God. So not only is that a desecration of the name of God, but it is a lack in the performance of the mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem, because we're trying to act in a way that gets people to love God. Whereas you see how wonderful Jews are, and they act so pleasant to all people, and they're such an upright, honest, and just general nice demeanor, people say, oh, they really put into practice their love of God. You know, they act much more nicely than non-religious people. So we want to get in on the game. We want to get in on the action of God as well. And we love the fact that this is what attachment to God causes people to act in this manner. Shorish mitzvah zo yadua shelo yikayim adam mitzvos Hashem baruch hu yofe rak ba'avoso oso. So the Rambam seems to think that this is an independent sort of metaphysical requirement to love God in terms of just in the intellectual reaches of the of how a human brain is supposed to operate and the fundamental tachlis of how it's supposed to be. But the Sefer Chinuch has a more practical presentation of this mitzvah, that in order to fulfill the Torah properly, you have to love God. In other words, you shouldn't just be afraid. The Rambam says it's not you know, the highest level. It's good, obviously. It's better than nothing if you observe the Torah because you want the reward for observing the Torah and you don't want the punishments for lack of observing the Torah. But a higher level even of observing the Torah is to do it just out of pure love of God, just like, you know, your parents. So that you're obviously, a person has a better relationship with one's parents if they do what the parent says because they love the parent and want to make the parent happy, as opposed to my parents are quick with taking off the belt and, you know, that they're gonna hit me if I don't do what they say. So that's obviously a lower level of relationship than is just loving someone so much that you want to do things that make them happy. Dine ha-mitzvah, the rules are as follows. Sh'roi lo'odam sh'yosim kol machashavto v'chol megamaso achar abas Hashem. That really, the fundamental thing with which you occupy your mind should be love of God. V'yarich belibo tomid ki kol mashehu ba'olam me'o sh'eruvani mechavot. Pasuk in Koheles. From wealth and children and honor, ha'kol ka'ayin u'cha'efes vasohu keneged ha'vaso baruchu. That anything that exists in the world, even some things that people really love, if they amassing wealth, that wealth has to come second to the love of God. Even one's own children, which one naturally loves very much, but nevertheless, love of God has to come before that, even, as we know from Avram Avinu and the Akedah, that Avram Avinu was prepared to sacrifice his main successor, Yitzchak, for the sake of God. It turns out that the whole point of the story is a lesson that God doesn't want that. Well, doesn't want child sacrifice. But fundamentally, if it's a choice between one's very close relatives that one's very much and one's a relationship with God, one has to choose one's relationship with God. Again, does not mean if one child is off the derech, you should cut the child off and not have anything to do with it under normal circumstances. But if God comes first, an honor that even you should be prepared to accept a lower level of honor in life, and if it means that you'll be able to have a close relationship with God, that all of these things are totally worthless when you think about the cosmic proportions. If you analyze things on a very large scale, then all these earthly things are really insignificant when compared to God. V'igat tomid kol hayom b'vakosha sachochma l'man yasig yidiyavo. That you have to pursue fundamentally wisdom. Sof dovar yasa kol yecholto lahargil machshavos libo kol hayom b'munoso v'yichudo actually rega echad b'yom v'alayla b'akitzo sheli zocher avas adona b'cholibo. You're supposed to train yourself to think so much about love of God that that's the main thing that you think about all the time. It's obviously a very high level. It's hard to imagine most people are holding by this, but that should be what we strive for, that we think about God all the time. That you have an engaged couple, and they're very strict about observing the laws of Shomer Negiah, but they are so deeply and fundamentally in love, they just can't wait for the day that they're going to get married and they're gonna start living together, and they dwell on each other's all the time. To do what can they do to be with each other, to please each other? So that should be the same way we think about God. The Rambam also describes this in very poetic language. that it, we should be as worked up and get butterflies in our stomach when we think of God the same way we think about a person with whom we're in love. This is explained in the Gemara around the different masechtos and the midrashim. This mitzvah applies all places and all times for males and females. That if we specifically turn our attention to subjects which are not related to God, again, not that we fundamentally understand the higher purpose to them, but just because we think they're fun, then this is not allowed. To try to get the honor, you're just trying to increase your name, but not to be able to help others. So if you're running for office or something, as you're looking for honor, because if you're trying to get your career ahead and you want a political career and you want people to bow and scrape to you, then that's not allowed. But if your intention in running for office is genuinely to help people who are in need of help, then that is allowed, because that's fundamentally a tachlis of avodas Hashem and loving God. Again, it doesn't mean that you're never allowed to have fun or relax, but it has to be that your perspective on these things is that, okay, I'm really stressed out now, and I need this in order to be a better Ovid Hashem in the long run. Not just that, hey, you know, I'm really interested in just having fun and not engaging in serious intellectual pursuits. And to heck with it, to heck with all these theological discussions. So now you're not allowed. So bita asezev on shogadol, and your punishment is very great, because it really can affect the most important thing in life, which is your relationship with God. Vezos min hamitzvos hatmidios al ha'adam hamutolos olav la'olam. So just like the last one, this is one of the mitzvos tmidios. This is a mitzvah that you have to observe 24/7. Literally, okay, when you're sleeping, you're not going to be able to think about it. Okay, but in all of your waking moments, you're fundamentally, this mitzvah applies every single moment of your life. Mitzvah Tov Yotes, 419, Mitzvahs Talmud Torah, the mitzvah to learn Torah. Oh, we're doing that right now, Gevaldik. Mitzvahs asay lilmod chokhmas haTorah ulalamda. According to the Sefer HaChinuch, the mitzvah to learn and to teach is the same mitzvah. Other Rishonim count it as two separate mitzvos, that one is to learn and one is to teach. Kelomar, keitzad nase haMitzvos v'nishmor mimashem minoanu hakel mimenu. So when the fundamental purpose of learning Torah is to better understand how we put the Torah into practice and observe it in our lives. This applies, again, not only to halacha, but to agoda, to hashkafa as well. Then when we learn it was not just nice stories when you think about these agadot in the Gemara and the Midrashim, but rather they're also part of the instruction of of the messages that we should internalize of how to live a divinely inspired life. V'ladas gamkein mishpatei haTorah al kivon haemes. So we should understand also how all the precepts of the Torah in the correct way. You shall teach them diligently to your children. It includes one's students, not just one's specific children. That students are called children. The children of the Nevi'im. So it doesn't mean literally their children, but it means their students. Visham Namar Vishinantam. It says also in the Sifri, why is this the Torah say here Vishinantam, that you should teach them diligently? So Shinun is a higher level than just learning. Shumisudarim Bitoch Picha, that they should be well presented by your mouth. Kisha Adam Shoalach Dovar Al Tehe Megam Gimlo, that when somebody asks you a question in Torah, yeah, it should give a straight answer. You should be able, it should be so organized in your head that you should be able to give a straight answer. That doesn't mean, of course, that you always have to answer the question. If you feel it's not appropriate, you also have to express yourself in the right way when somebody answers, when somebody asks you a question. It shouldn't be you give an exact impression. You know, there's a way of speaking that when you're paskening a halacha, so somebody can ask you a question, you might answer, you know, I think most poskim say you should do this. Or if I'm giving a shiur and I say, you know, really, this seems more correct. Most poskim say this. That means that, in a lot of issues nowadays in terms of halacha, so there are so many different opinions, it's almost impossible to completely say that the others are totally wrong and that this is only right. But even if that's true, even if one does have a very strong opinion about something, so you don't normally want to say, yeah, everyone else is wrong and you do this. You know, that's not considered a modest way of speaking and a respectful way of speaking to the other authorities. But the listener also has to understand what the answerer is trying to say. That you have to know that sometimes you don't present yourself in a totally straightforward fashion. Rav Schechter likes to tell a story that he was once in Tannersville, where the Breuer's community summers.
Goes there every year.
Yeah, so Rav Schechter, so he was once there in the lifetime of Rav Schwab. So in Tannersville, apparently they made Shabbos, quote unquote, late Shabbos. Whereas in the city, in Breuer's, they make early Shabbos at 7:10. So
in the height of the summer when it would be normally.
Right, so they make it late in the Tannersville, presumably because people need to get up from the city and they to make it any earlier than necessary.
It's not really late, it's just the time that it's...
We call late Shabbos colloquially, yes.
That's confusing for the newbies. That's
right. Yeah, it doesn't mean that you're doing it more later than is acceptable, but rather that you're doing it later than the early Shabbos, yes.
The working guys have to drag up.
Right, so you want to give people time. So one of the people in Tannersville asked Rav Schechter... So the rest of my family is in the city, and I normally daven. I don't usually come up to Tannersville, but I'm just here for one Shabbos.
Right.
I'm fundamentally based in the city, so do I have to accept Shabbos at 7:10 in accordance with the what the Breuer's in the city is doing? Mm. So Rav Schechter says, I don't think so. So this guy said, but no, I really need an answer. What do I have to accept Shabbos at 7:10, even though I'm here in Tannersville? Shechter says, no, I don't think so. So then the guy went away, and he came back a few minutes later to Rav Schechter, and he said, oh, I just got off the phone with Rav Schwab. And he told me I don't have to accept Shabbos at the time that they're accepting in the city while I'm in Tannersville. So Rav Schechter said, yeah, that's what I just told you. So he said, no, you didn't. You said, I don't think so. When I called Rav Schwab, he said, no, you don't have to do that. So some people need to be, I guess maybe Rav Schwab knew this guy and he knew that he needed to be told more directly,
you can't hear between the lines.
Yeah, so you have a listener, anyway, that's not a chisaron in mechudad, in besudar, in beficha, that it just means that the answerer should not, the respondent should not be unsure about what to say.
The person who's asked the question. Okay.
V'nichpila mitzvah zo b'mekomos rabim. This mitzvah is repeated many times. Shneimar ulmadtem v'asisem. The problem is there's no such pasuk where it says ulmadtem v'asisem. So it's probably talking that it's a paraphrase of ulmadtem osam ushmartem lasosam, which is a pasuk that does appear that you shall learn them and then do it. So we see lefan leman yilmedun ulmadtem v'limadtem osam es v'nicha. Fine. It's explained many times, both in terms of the teaching and in terms of the learning. So it seems here that the fundamental purpose of learning Torah is to know what to do and to internalize and know very well all the rules of the Torah and how to learn what's life. That's why we know that classically the Gemara talks about how the highest level of learning is to be able asuke shmaitza liba delchasa, that there's a lot of complex discussions in the Gemara. So one of the key ways that you know a person has to be on a high level of learning is to know how to translate the complex discussions into a final halachic ruling. Mm. Even though you have to know the discussions, you can't just learn the shortened kitzur svarim of halacha and expect that it gives you a really deep understanding of halacha. You have to know the background. You have to know how to put it into practice. So that's many people point out that the way it's done in the yeshiva system nowadays. First of all, as we're going to see as we learn this mitzvah, that the classical way that it's laid out, that you the process of learning and the structure of schooling that's mentioned in the Chazal and the Rishonim is very different from what's done nowadays. And this is one example of that, that there's not that much emphasis that's placed on Suke Shmaitz Aliba Dehilchasa, that when people are learning the Talmudic discussions, they're doing all the brisker analysis of what type of halacha is this and what, you know, how does it fit in with other discussions in the Gemara in different places, and can we explain why this Rishon said the way he did and why this Rishon said that, what's their underlying rationale. And then on the other hand, then they have a Mishnah Berurah Seder, that they learn the final word about what to do, what they consider the final word about to do. But the connection between the two is somewhat lacking. Hmm. That's why people think that these fancy Talmudical analyses are what categorizes one as a great learner, but it's not really true. That's not that you have to know how to analyze, that's true, but if it doesn't fundamentally lead to a greater skills in applying them in practicality, you know, people look down on it. You know, to a certain extent nowadays in yeshivas, that the more you analyze, you concoct very deep analyses, the better. But then they sort of look down on the halacha. But it's really not correct. The more, according to Chazal, the more meaningful method of learning is lasukei shmaitza liba dehilchaza. Shorish mitzvah zo yadua, that the reasoning is obvious. Kiba limud yeda ha'adam darchi Hashem yisbarach. So not only is figuring out how to act yourself, but there is an advantage in learning the things that are maybe not applicable. Learning, learning kochim, learning the masechtos that deal with the tumah and tara, ritual purity and impurity, and the worship in the Beis HaMikdash. Even though it's not directly relevant nowadays, there are principles there that are relevant to halachos that are applicable nowadays. Like we were discussing yesterday, actually, we're talking about tevilas kelim. That we're talking about toveling disposable utensils. So in order to understand what utensils you have to tovel and what not, so many people cite Mishnayos in Kalim, talking about which vessels receive ritual purity and impurity. So there it talks about an example of a disposable vessel that's not mekabel tuma. It doesn't accept ritual impurity at all because it's not really considered a kli. So therefore, so that's why, again, it's a whole discussion of Maisa, but that's why many people say that disposable utensils, even if they're made of a material that otherwise would have to be toveled, do not have to be toveled. And which is why Rav Moshe Feinstein also applied that to the rules of what kind of cup you're allowed to use for Kiddush. Rav Moshe Feinstein held that you're absolutely not allowed to use a disposable cup for Kiddush because this reason is not really even considered a vessel.
What about they make plastic Kiddush cups? They look like Kiddush, like real Kiddush
cups.
But
they're reusable.
But it's disposable.
But they're reusable.
You really should. Look, most poskim, for various reasons, most poskim do disagree with Moshe Feinstein about this, that they feel that b'dievid, if there's no other option, you are allowed to make Kiddush on a disposable cup. But everybody agrees. Everybody agrees that really you shouldn't. That's not considered the honor for Kiddush. So that would be better than a regular disposable cup for Kiddush, but it doesn't necessarily solve all the problems. If you reuse them a lot, so then maybe it's okay, yeah.
Aren't disposable utensils a pretty new thing? I mean, aluminum foil.
Yeah, so those types, plastic.
How many years ago they didn't have disposable?
Plastic and aluminum, yes, but that's why we use the precedent of this kli that's mentioned in Maseches Kelim, which is made of straw or something that you throw out. So. Anyway, so it is helpful.
I know people who wash those turkey pigs.
Rav Schechter also, yeah, okay. So maybe I have to tell them if you do that. So that's a mashit. So Rav Schechter likes to tell a story also that when he was learning with the Rabbi Willig b'Chavrusa in the Kollel at YU, so they used to practice what they learned, putting what they learned into practice by taking a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and they would just read the beginning where he discusses what the shiloh was, and they would say, let's try to figure out the answer, what he's going to say. So he said all the time, they would come up with this whole thing, they would think they know the answer, whatever, and then they read the tshuva, and Rav Moshe Feinstein, a regular practical issue, Rav Moshe Feinstein is bringing examples to support his point from a gemara in like Erchin, which talks about when you assess the value of someone or something to donate to the Beis HaMikdash, which is not a tract that most people learn. very much nowadays. So really, and sometimes you need principles from masechtas that are not commonly learned in order to apply them to things that are commonly learned. So in addition to that, we should be familiar with all the Torah in order to know, so to speak, how God thinks. Part of understanding and loving God is you want to know the whole system. That if you again, it's hard for us to really learn Kodshim and Taurus. But without that, you don't really get a handle on the whole system of the Torah. Yeah, but with a major caveat that is secondary. More important is that we should learn things that are practical. But once we master the things that are practical, or in the course of mastering it, if you're learning Daf Yomi or something, so yeah, so you learn the Kodshim and the Taurus as part of the curriculum. But our people, so there are people who spend a lot of time, people earning in these brisker kolim in Eretz Yisrael. They learn in yeshiva for a couple of years. I have a friend actually who just came back from Israel. He was learning for many years in a yeshiva that only studies Kodshim. Yeah, so his parents kept telling him, "No, get smicha or something. Be a, you know, at least you'll get a dakin. You could be a rabbi or something." He says, "No, I want to be a kodshim rabbi."
Specialist.
Okay, that's very nice to learn kodshim. If you have the broad perspective of Torah, you've learned for many years many different masechtos, and you want to spend, if you want to go very fast, and you want to learn through kodshim, or you want to spend one seder a day on kodshim, is one thing, but. To learn for 10 years all three starim kodshim, besides the Mishnah, you know, little Mishnah Berurah Seder and Halacha, is to my mind it's really not the correct approach. But they feel no, you have to have people who are experts in this as well. Okay. Vezulaso lo yeda velo yavin venechshav kabehema. That if you don't learn the Torah, you're going to be like an animal, because that's the difference with people and animals. That people are supposed to elevate their behavior. And emulate God, to think the way God thinks. I mean, obviously not exactly, but to start on that path. And if you don't do that, so you're going to remain just doing whatever you want, and that's like an animal. Medine ha-mitzvah, ma-sha-omer zichronim levracha, me-e-mosai maschil ha-av l-lamed es b'no Torah. At what age should the father begin to teach his son Torah? Once he starts talking, milamdo Torah tziva lanu Moshe. That if you teach in the pasuk Torah tziva lanu Moshe, morash akilas Yaakov, which obviously is okay, basic fundamental idea that God Moshe commanded us Torah. The pasuk rishon mikrishma Shema Yisrael, when you're putting them to bed, are you saying Shema Yisrael with them? Shushma Yisrael, v'acharkach, then when he gets a little more advanced, v'acharkach melamdo me'atmad, but see, it starts right away. You know, you shouldn't, when you're putting a child to bed, you shouldn't just sing nursery rhymes. Well, that's okay also. You could do that also, but you should make sure that the Shema and all these things, because never too early to start. V'acharkach melamdo me'atmad mipsuki ha-torah chi ben sheisho ben sheva. Then you would teach him more and more psukim, until he turns 6 or 7, shemolicho etzem alam de atinoko. So you start school in first grade.
Preschool.
According to this, classical presentation, that's the cheder.
Spends is. Started at 3, though. No, they started young.
In Europe.
Yeah.
This is talking about in the times of Chazal. They used to start at age 6 or 7. Whoa. Now we start kids in school, age 2, 3, all these things to put them into the cheder. They're already worried about what shidduch they're going to get, what college they're going to get into. Make sure they're
all set.
Their
resumes are.
Did
you know historically why they started at 3 in Europe?
Cheder, I don't know.
Well, the kids are starting to ask questions.
Okay, but they were taught at home before then. Not that you didn't talk to them at all. You know, like it says, you learn, you teach him more and more psukim.
Well, maybe they didn't have that many
lambdas
like they had in Europe. Yeah, and for the
cheders,
you need to have.
Yeah, so I mean, the Chazal talk about how you're supposed to have you're supposed to hire a cheder teacher in every city. It's very important.
The stages.
Pirkei Avos says 5. Ben chamesh shanim lamikra. So that's a little bit of a stira. You're right to what it says over here that you should start at age 6 or 7. So some say that that's talking about someone who's really smart. I don't know.
I wonder what it was in Yemen.
Yemen. Oh, that's a good question. Yemen would be a good yeah. So in Yemen they stuck more to this schedule. Okay, 5, 6, 7. It's not such a big difference.
I remember from my case, if I may add, when I was just so little, before going to bed, my mother would raise me up to the mezuzah and say, "One of sukkim." That was my very first memory about anything having to do with, learning. Then my parents secretly hired a malamed, and, we have our Sidurim Aleph base. Again, that's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
It was a beautiful way to start. It's just so integral in every way.
Natural.
It was a beautiful beginning, and it just continued.
So they used to do at age 3 to take the kid into cheder. So they used to have do it like around, I think, either on Shavuos. What? On Shavuos.
With the honey, with
the. Yeah, so they write they write the letters with honey, and then the kid licks the honey to get the Torah is like dvash, right? Yeah. Dvash v'chalav tachas hashonech. That the Torah is sweet. So the child should get a good impression right off the bat and be motivated to learn, as opposed to thinking this is just something they impose on me, but rather something enjoyable that I want to do.
It's very charming.
Rav Salvechik used to say, somebody would say, how can I get schar for learning? I enjoy it so much. So Rav Salvechik says, no, that's the point. That's not a contradiction.
Yeah, that's the
you're supposed to enjoy learning. Right. You're supposed to enjoy, just because you enjoy something doesn't mean you don't get mitzvah points for it. So
isn't
eating,
why,
is
that's why they gave out candies on Simchas Torah to kids also.
Yeah, that's part of the reason that, I mean, that's not an official minhag, but the practice of most shuls is that you give out candy to the kids on Simchas Torah. They should love the Torah. It works, for the most part. At least for, they're little kids, and they love Simchas Torah because of that reason. V'roi l'chol ben das, sh'yiten libo sh'lo l'hachbid ol hayeled b'limud b'odenu racha ivorim v'racha levav. You should not try to teach a child too much while he is not of full mental and physical capacity yet. There's a famous story about the stipler. The stipler was very intense. And his son, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, is considered the biggest bucky in all of Torah. To have a mamish on his fingertips. So that's currently alive. So there was another parent in Bnei Brak at the time who apparently didn't allow his son to go out to recess. No, they have to sit the whole time and learn more and more. He wanted his son to become a real gadol. So no breaks. All learning more and more and more learning. So the stipler said to the father, I need to tell you something. Your son is a little kid now. He needs to play. If he doesn't play now, he's going to play later.
Yes.
And that's what happened. He said good the guy, for most of his life, this son who was forced to learn so much, did not accomplish much in learning because he was always taking breaks and strolling out and coffee breaks and schmoozing with his friends and because he was
making up for lost
time. Exactly. He was making up for lost time that he didn't get to play when he was a little kid. But again, that's what people tell you, secular experts in education tell you nowadays that recess and playing. Yes. I think
it's like those Chinese.
Yes. I think you showed this to me. Yeah.
I didn't know. Okay.
I think so. But see, Ashkacha Pratis, you brought it again today. Right. The important
I'm
is.
I'm gonna follow up after this year. Okay.
that playing is the way children really learn as well, and learn life skills, and not only just from books. So you have to make sure that children. Not to take that away, and you should not put too much pressure on them to learn. It applies to later in life also. That it's ridiculous the amount of in order to get into a good college, what high schoolers are even expected to do in terms of extracurriculars and how much they have to put their nose to the grindstone. The educational system.
They have to work after school.
The educational system needs serious reform, in many ways. Okay. Then until he gets stronger in mental and physical energy, so until you get stronger and you have more zitzfleisch, Ve'atzmosav yimalu moach, that his bones will be filled with marrow. Ve'yuchal lisbol yegia salimod velo yikrenu choli ha'his'alfus. What?
I
have ha'hit'alfut.
Yes,
yeah, that you could faint. You might, the child could faint, and he might, he will just suffer too much through the intensity of the learning. Besivas hayegia rabba Allah, because it's too hard for him to work so hard at learning. Vulam achar is chazei kocho v'yoreinav lovin l'kol morav, and when he's of the age where he really can sit and learn properly. Oz roi v'choshra davar mechuyev lavitzavar be'ula shel Torah, then you really should yoke him under the yoke of Torah.
Here again, I think the Maimer Chinuch Lenoir Lefidarcho.
Yeah.
That also applies.
Yeah, but the point is to push him as much as possible. He should get used to the idea that learning Torah is hard work. I mean, it can be enjoyable also, but you have to put a lot of work into it. You don't just sit back, you know, in an easy chair and read the Gemara. You're supposed to work hard at it. There's a joke that just showing kind of the idea of enjoying learning Torah as opposed to other things in their life. So the was a famous joke that the mashgiach, the spiritual advisor of yeshiva, once came to the dormitory, and he found a student sitting back in a chair with a shtender pulled towards him, learning Reb Chaim and drinking a beer.
I like this.
So the mashgiach says, "Nu? That's how you learn a Reb Chaim?" The student answered, "No, that's how you drink a beer." As idea that the enjoyment of the beer is enhanced by learning a Reb Chaim at the same time.
That's
great. So then, okay, but that's if you want to drink a beer. But if you want to learn, then you should work very hard, and it really is a lot of toil. They say that the Chazon Ish, sometimes he writes in his Sefer that he thinks that the Rashba supports his idea, but he doesn't have access to the Rashba at this time. So somebody asked him, "What? You live in Bnei Brak, in Vilna, all these places, you have your own library. You didn't have a Rashba in the house? What do you mean?" He says, "No, that's not what I meant. I meant I physically didn't have the strength to get up from my desk and go find the Rashba, because I've been learning for so long and pouring my sweat and toil into the learning and writing my Sefer. I just didn't have the strength to go get up and go to the shelf and get the Rashba." But to a certain extent, that's how we should be. That's how we should be pouring all our energy into learning Torah and into truly understanding it properly. B'chanoch l'nar apidarko, there are, again, this is to push him to his full capacity. There are children who are simply not intellectually cut out for it. So it's not right that in Eretz Yisrael especially, that people who are in the Haredi community are expected to learn full-time almost forever. They're considered second-class Haredi citizens. It's really not right. The people are just not cut out for it, and if they are forced to only learn and not get a job, then they might go off the derech. They might have very, very bad things. They'll just be unproductive in life. If they sit in the kollel being mediocre to less than mediocre students, that's obviously a much less productive use of one's life than becoming an excellent plumber. Or whatever. So again, you doesn't mean you shouldn't learn at all. You should learn as much as possible. But it's very, very bad. So Yashku Tamid Miyen Rikcha V'Yachilehu Midivsha. That you're supposed to constantly put. In other words, not only to force them to learn because it's the hardness of it, but you're supposed to show them the sweetness as well, and you should feed them from the honey of Torah. So it should make it enjoyable that if you know, people enjoy saying Divrei Torah at Shabbos meals or something, so then you could, if they want to, they make it enjoyable. It's say nice Shtik Lech Torah, do it nice. So some people, I like this a lot. There's actually Divrei Torah at Shabbos meals. that there was an article in the Jewish Action, I think, that about the way different people conducted their Shabbos meal. So somebody said, this was some religious educator, that somebody said to him once, how come you don't have Divrei Torah at your Shabbos meals? He says, what do you mean we don't have Divrei Torah at my Shabbos meals? He says, no, every other rabbi I've been to, you know, he, in the middle of the meal, hushes the conversation and says a little drasha. That's what it means to have a Divrei Torah at the Shabbos meal. He says, what are you talking about? The whole meal we're discussing topics in Torah. What did you think of this? How does this fit into the Torah? Was an interesting shiloh you've had this week. Is this, he says, I feel it's more educational to build it more naturally into the conversation than to say, shh, we're having a Dvar Torah now.
So that's he weaves it into the...
Yeah, that's if somebody fulfills the mitzvah of Talmud Torah properly and Avas Hashem properly, they will not need to be prodded to say a Dvar Torah. That will be a standard topic of conversation. Doesn't mean you can't talk about anything else, but there'll be a standard topic of conversation to discuss Torah-related topics.
An integral part of daily life.
Right. Exactly. Until when are you required to teach one son Torah? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Kigon Zvulun Ben Dan. Who's that? It was a guy who lived in the times of the Chazal. What do I mean? Perush Adam Sheh Bedoram Sheshmo Kein Shelimdo Avi Aviv. Mikra u'mishna Talmud halachos v'agodos. He learned by his grandfather, not by his father. So it's a whole discussion in the Gemara whether this means that one's grandfather is also the grandfather is also required to teach the grandson Torah. The conclusion seems to be not, but okay. Obviously, he should, if possible, fine. Perush Adam Shea Bedora. So he taught him what? Not only Tanakh, but Mishnah and Gemara and halachos and agodos, also the stories. There's all discussion exactly what this means, what are the halachic implications of this. Again, it doesn't technically apply to a grandfather, it doesn't technically apply to all these things, but it applies to Tanakh, or the Chumash. So a lot of this is the differences of opinion. His grandfather taught him more. But that might have been above and beyond the basic halachic requirement. The basic halachic requirement seems to be it only applies to a father and a son. And it applies only to understand either the whole Tanakh or Chumash, the basic understanding of these things. But if possible, one should certainly... One should certainly teach one's son or one's grandson, if possible, much more than that. And in fact, some people say that even that nowadays it's certainly required to teach more than that because we have so many printed books with so many study aids that this doesn't. You know, it used to be a big thing if you just had to have a blank Sefer Torah, you know, with no vowels, not blank. That's in the written, nothing written there, but Sefer Torah with no vowels, no chirup, no commentaries. So then it's a big thing for the father to teach the son how to read it properly and how to interpret the psukim in the, according to the basic understanding, to derive maybe some halachos from the psukim. But nowadays, since all that is readily available, so maybe according to the basic halacha, father does have to teach the son much more than that. And if the chiyuv is all of Tanakh and not just Chumash, then we have a major problem. That really, especially in boys' schools, I mean, I don't think they teach all of Tanakh in girls' schools either, but it's ridiculous. By the end of high school, one should have studied, at least on a basic level, all of Tanakh. It's really not right that they don't do that. They should do it faster also. That people are very into literary analysis nowadays. Yeah. So in these Tanakh classes in modern Orthodox high schools, they're very into the literary understanding, which is fine. Again, as long as undertaken with the appropriate reverence to the holy texts. But one should also have a bekiyus in Tanakh, that one should go much faster and should certainly know the whole Tanakh.
Yeshiva world's anti-Tanakh. Because they say that people misunderstand Tanakh, and while learning Gemara, you including Tanakh in the Gemara.
Yeah, we'll get to the including Tanakh in the Gemara later, but I assure you, I assure you that Reb Moshe Feinstein, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, and Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and all the Gedolim knew Tanakh very well. Can assure you, Rebelsky, of course, was very into. So, but they probably had to do it on their own time. It wasn't taught formally.
I don't understand.
But you have to. Yeah. They.
I don't get that.
Someone who's a very big brisker, Reb Moshe Tursky, Hashem Yikom Damo, in his biography, he was killed in the Harnof massacre. So in his biography, he talks about how one of his students, he was always learning, obviously, Gemara with all the brisker things. So he, I think during or right after lunch, at the very beginning of Second Seder, he used to learn in a different yeshiva. So he said one of his students went to visit him at that time to discuss a pressing issue and found him studying Sefer Yechezkel. What? Like, you should... Like, Orthodox people don't read Sefer, I'm being facetious, but he says, no, that's you have to understand that. That's also
like
part...
It's like Catholics don't read the Bible. I mean, that's... Unfortunately, it's a reaction to that scholar.
That's also true.
Right,
yes.
Right. That's why they...
Mm-hmm. That sitting and reading the Bible became associated with maskilim. That's not right.
And their interpretations. Ah, there you go.
So they didn't teach it formally.
Our interpretation.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Thank you.
That's what they say. Yeshivish. They're arguing. Say the joke that you have two people in yeshivish yeshiva who are discussing the Ktzois commentary on Shulchan Aruch Chosh Mishpah, which contains deep analytical things. So they're saying, how do we know that Moshe and Aaron were brothers? Because the Ktzoi says, gives the Moshe and Aaron as examples of people who are not allowed to testify against each other because they're so closely related. So the other says, but maybe the Ktzoi meant that they were another type of relative. How do we know that it meant that they were Davka brothers? So, it's a joke. I hope it didn't actually really happen. Ooh. But,
it's not impossible.
Okay,
it's a joke for a reason.
It's not. It's really not right. People should make sure if people are motivated on their own time. But high school should really. You could cut out a little bit of the secular studies. I wouldn't object, and they should learn to teach Tanakh better. Right, because they're not. Because
because they don't have as much Gemara.
So in most Orthodox schools, so women don't. Girls are not taught Gemara, or at least not as much Gemara as the boys. So then they spend more time on Tanakh.
No, but not just. I mean, our daughter at 4 years had a much greater education than her brothers.
Uh-huh.
They started at the very second grade, Mrs. Ashkenazi, chanting diktuk and teaching Hebrew as a language. The boys never had that. Wow. They just assumed, Aramaic, you'll get it, whatever.
And some do and some don't.
And one did and one didn't.
Yeah.
Right. But Rachel ended up with a very solid education.
But you see, the girls have
education.
Much more.
Because, right.
Very impressive.
So,
yeah.
Because again, as we'll see later, so women are not technically obligated in the midst of Talmud Torah. That's why the girls' schools take more flexibility. That whatever we teach them, we have more choice. With the boys, they really want to drill in as much Gemara as possible because they're really chayiv in Talmud Torah. But again, you should make time. You should have a Seder. You should, for a basic. It's completely outrageous that people don't have a basic familiarity with all of Tanakh.
Yeah.
It's really not right. Okay. Avichen, where are we? Umishelo limdo oso avosav shem chayovin bezek kigon. That's why people say when people are quoting, there's some quotation of a pasuk. So yeshivishly trained people. I'll say, where's that pasuk? Oh, I think it's a pasuk in Yevamos. It's quoted in Maseches Yevamos. Okay, whatever. It's fine. V'chein mi shalim do also avosav shem chayavim bezek yon avi v'avi. Here we're assuming that grandfather is chayav. So if your grandfather, father and grandfather don't teach you, chayav lelamid atzmo, you have to teach yourself. Because you're godol v'yakir badover. When you're old enough to understand and pay for a teacher if necessary, you're required to teach yourself. Shenemar, ulmatem basisem osam. Same paraphrase over here of the pasuk. Vim sheim hayu ha'av ha'bein tzrichen lilmod vein biado shalav sheyuchlo shneim lilmod tamid. So maybe the father did not have a proper education, and now he has a son, and he's supposed to teach his son, but he also has to learn more himself. So what's going on? What should you do? V'hu kodem livno. So the father is supposed to pay for his teacher before he pays for the son's teacher, to focus on his own learning before he pays, before he does the son. But
fasten your seatbelts first.
V'im b'no novon mimenu v'talmudem iskaya b'yotzer. He sees that his son has the potential to become the Gadol Hador. He's much smarter than he is. Then you should focus on the son's learning more than your own learning. So then the son comes first. You see also that people should be, gifted children should be recognized as such and not necessarily placed in the same classes as everyone else. It's just going to slow them down, you're going to make them bored, and the other people might not be able to keep up, but they're going to drag them down to their level. Someone was telling me the other day about programs being implemented in certain high schools to phase out different tracks. The honors track and non-honors track. It's not so bush. It's a wasting of mind is not right. And people should be, the children who are capable of learning more should be given preference in general. Also in terms of kolim. So there should be standards that you have in Israel nowadays. You have this system that people, especially in the Haredi community, that they learn Torah either for a certain amount of time or indefinitely after marriage. I mean, in America, it's usually more limited. In Eretz Israel, it's more indefinite. If you've been in the system, you should know that not everybody is cut out to be doing this. That the Gevirim, and so I always like to say, if I were a billionaire and I were bankrolling Kolim, if I were inclined to do such a thing, so I would insist on tests, or that they that the people who I'm supporting are really capable of becoming real serious Torah scholars and understanding well, and eventually writing svarim and producing things that are big things or being major. Okay, communal resources doesn't have to be a pulpit rabbi, but Chaim Kanievsky is not a pulpit rabbi. He's not a rosh yeshiva, but he's a big marbitz Torah. People turn to him for questions.
Exactly.
So that's at least someone of that stature. But if you're if everybody who comes and has a kolo where they have mediocre students, and there are, I've met them. There are kolim with very mediocre students, and I would not, if I were a big veer, I would not want to bankroll such a thing. It doesn't mean that, again, it doesn't mean they shouldn't learn at all. Maybe they should spend one seder in kolo. I don't know, but. Okay, whatever. Until when do you have to learn Torah? Until the day you die. Shenemar, Fenyasuru Milvavcha Koli Mechayacha, that lest the words of the Torah leave your heart all the days of your life. You have to constantly review. You're not supposed to forget anything. It's one of the rules of Talmud Torah, is you're not supposed to forget anything. Shenemar ulmatem vas. I skipped. Sorry. Vodivligu chachomim badovra derech hamusar. That they're trying to give you ethical inspiration. Ulalamed bnei adam chifetz, to teach people what they should be wanting and doing. Vamru shafilu b'shas misa chayev adam lilmod Torah. That at the very time of your death, you should be learning Torah. Shenemar zosa Torah adam ki yamus be'ohel. This is a Torah, a person who dies in a tent. Obviously, not the simple understanding of that pasuk. The simple understanding of that pasuk is talking about the para aduma. That when it says this is the teaching, a person when he dies in a tent, so everything in the tent becomes tamish. Okay, good. So that, but with the Chazal homiletically interpreted this pasuk as meaning, this is the Torah, this is the nature of the Torah, Adam ki yamus ba'ohel, that even at the time when somebody dies in the tent of Torah, in the Beis Medrash, somebody should be in the tent of Torah at the time of death. And it also, the more famous interpretation of this pasuk, I think I gave a drush about this once, was that ein divrei Torah miskayim el v'mishim mei misatzmo aleihem, that the word, that Torah only truly receives its full due and expression through someone who kills himself over them. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Not literally to kill yourself, but it means
every effort.
Every effort. The Rambam famously, the way he formulates this, based on the quote-unquote last chapter of Pirkei Avos, the sixth chapter, the apocryphal chapter. I mean, it's important. It's a real brisa, but it's attached onto Pirkei Avos. Talks about how there are different levels. There's the standard level of regular Talmud Torah, and there's another level attained by those who wish to have Kisra Shel Torah, the crown of Torah. So what if you want to have the crown of Torah, meaning not just the knowledge of it, but a full fusion of yourself with the Torah and a deep understanding and mastery of it. So one of the, so it gives different examples over there. It says, Pas b'melach tochal ma'ayim b'mesura tishta, that you should not be, you should drink, eat bread and drink water, and you should not be too focused on earthly pleasures, and just push yourself as much as possible in terms of sleep quantity, and always be toiling to understand the Torah more and more, which is obviously a very high level. But the idea is that the Chazal tell us that the way to truly master the Torah is to exert tremendous effort in order to understand it fully, which is, again, something which is attained, especially nowadays, where we have much more material comfort. In the Orthodox community especially, it's attained by very, very few people. But it really is, you when you meet someone who has Kisra Shel Torah, you know the difference, that they really toil to understand and bond themselves and bond their brain and method of thinking with the Torah.
Bas b'melech tochal, right?
Yeah. So you shouldn't... but again, this is not something for everyone. It's understood throughout Jewish history that not everybody is cut out for Kisra Shel Torah. But it's a totally qualitatively different relationship that one has with the Torah, and it involves, again, much effort, which not everybody is willing to expend. But those who are willing to expend the effort are guaranteed that Kosh Baruch Hu will help them, and that they will attain the level of Kisra Shel Torah.